श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 2 एंटाइटल द एक्टिविटीज ऑफ महाराज अग्निध्र टेक्स्ट नंबर 7 का त्वं चिकीर्षस चकिं मुनिवर्य शैले मायासि कापि भगवत् परदेवताया विज्ये विभर्ष धनुषि सुरदात्मनोर्थे किं वा मृगान् मृगयसे विपिने प्रमत्ता का त्वं चिकीर्षस च किं मुनिवर्य शैले मायासि कापि भगवत् परदेवताया विज्ये विभर्षि धनुषि सुरदात्मनोर्थे किं वा मृगान् मृगयसे विपिने प्रमत्तान् The prince mistakenly addressed the Apsara, O best of saintly persons, who are you? Why are you on this hill and what do you want to do? Are you one of the illusory potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You seem to be carrying two bows without strings. What is the reason you carry these bows? Is it for some purpose of your own or for the sake of a friend? Perhaps you carry them to kill the mad animals in the forest. Purport. While undergoing severe penances in the forest, Agnidra was captivated by the movements of Purva Chitti, the girl sent by Lord Brahma. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Kamaistaistai Ritagyana. When one becomes lusty, he loses his intelligence. Therefore, Agnidra, having lost his intelligence, could not distinguish whether Purva Chitti was male or female. He mistook her for a Muniputra, the son of a saintly person in the forest, and addressed her as Munivarya. Because of her personal beauty, however, he could not believe her to be a boy. He therefore began studying her features. First he saw her two eyebrows, which were so expressive that he wondered whether he or she might be the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words used in this connection are Bhagavat Paradevataya. Devata, the demigods, all belong to this material world, whereas Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always beyond this material world and is therefore known as Paradevata. The material world is certainly created by Maya, but it is created under the direction of Paradevata, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dhyakshena Prakritihi Suyate Sacharacharam. Maya is not the ultimate authority for the creation of this material world. Maya acts on behalf of Krishna. Purvachiti's eyebrows were so beautiful that Agnidra compared them to bows without strings. He therefore asked her whether they were to be used for her own purpose or for the sake of someone else. Her eyebrows were like bows meant to kill animals in the forest. This material world is like a great forest, and its inhabitants are like forest animals, such as deer and tigers meant to be killed. The killers are the eyebrows of beautiful women. Captivated by the beauty of the fair sex, all the men of the world are killed by the bows without strings, but cannot see how they are killed by Maya. It is a fact, however, that they are being killed, bhutva bhutva praliyate. By dint of his tapasya, Agnidra could understand how Maya acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word pramattan is also significant. Pramatta refers to one who cannot control his senses. The entire material world is being exploited by people who are pramatta or vimudha. Prahlad Maharaj therefore said, Shoche tato vimukha chetasa indriyartha maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimhudam. They are rotting in material activities for transient material pleasure and spoiling their lives, toiling all day and night simply for sense gratification with no attachment for love of Godhead. I am simply lamenting for them and devising various plans to deliver them from the clutches of Maya. Karmis who act very seriously for sense gratification are always referred to in the Shastras by such terms as Pramatta, Vimukha or Vimhuda. They are killed by Maya. However, one who is a Pramatta, a sane, sober person, a Dhira, knows very well that a human being's primary duty is to render service to the Supreme Person. Maya is always ready to kill those who are Pramatta with her invisible bows and arrows. Agnidra questioned Purvachiti about this. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalaka. The prince mistakenly addressed the Apsara, O best of saintly persons, who are you? Why are you on this hill and what do you want to do? Are you one of the illusory potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You seem to be carrying two bows without strings. What is the reason you carry these bows? Is it for some purpose of your own or for the sake of a friend? Perhaps you carry them to kill the mad animals in the forest. Although the description of this Apsara Purvachiti is given over here in these verses in such a poetic, comparative and fantastic way, but we still see that Maharaj Agnidra, who is trying to scan her beauty limb by limb, over here is getting confused and bewildered. In this verse we see that Maharaj Agnidra, as he is observing the beauty of Purvachiti, he is losing his intelligence. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, therefore Agnidra, having lost his intelligence, could not even distinguish whether Purvachiti was a male or female. He mistook her for a Muniputra, the son of a saintly person in the forest, and addressed her as Munivarya. So we see that whenever material beauty one encounters, this is what happens. One loses one's intelligence, and material beauty is something which not satisfies or purifies or pacifies the soul, but actually it simply agitates the heart. It simply makes a living entity more confused and bewildered. One time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was explaining that Krishna's beauty, whenever we read of Krishna's beauty, it satisfies our heart. It purifies our heart. But whenever we come across any kind of material so-called beauty, that beauty, it agitates our heart. It doesn't satisfy the heart. It's agitative. It is not satisfying. And therefore, over here, Srila Prabhupada, he writes in the purport that as Maharaj Agnidra is glorifying the different limbs, beautiful limbs of this Apsara, he is also seeing that particular beauty of this Apsara is actually killing him. As here in Prabhupada writes, later in the purport, Purva Chitti's eyebrows were so beautiful that Agnidra compared them to bows without strings. And therefore he said that whether they were used for her own purpose or for the sake of someone else, her eyebrows were like bows meant to kill animals in the forest. And Prabhupada says this material world is like a great forest, and its inhabitants are like forest animals. The killers are the eyebrows of a beautiful woman. Captivated by the beauty of the fair sex, all the men of the world are killed by the bows without strings, but cannot see how they are killed by Maya. It is a fact, therefore, that they are being killed. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. So we see that simultaneously, as this beauty is being described, the beauty is described with its killing abilities, not satisfying abilities. Like materialistic men, when in their materialistic language, when they want to glorify someone's beauty, generally they say, for the opposite sex, it's a killer beauty. Hindi, they say khatarnak. What is the meaning of khatarnak? Dangerous. So over here, Purva Chitti's beauty was killer beauty. It was not satisfying. Her eyebrows were killer eyebrows. And when we read of Krishna's beauty or Krishna's eyebrows, Krishna's eyebrows, when one meditates upon, one can get relief from all the lust of the heart. It's been mentioned in the scriptures. But over here, the eyebrows of this Apsara, it agitates and inflames that lust within the heart. So therefore, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that a materialistic person, when he meditates and contemplates on sense objects or material beauty, what happens? He becomes confused. He loses his intelligence. As Krishna says in that celebrated verse, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsam Sangasteshu Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kamat Kamat Krodhod Bhijayate Krodhod Bhavati Sammohat Sammohat Smriti Vibhrama Smriti Bhramsat Buddhinasho Buddhinashat Pranashyati Buddhinashat Pranashyati. That is the culmination. One loses one's intelligence.
And it begins with
Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsam,
contemplating on material sense objects. So we see that whenever material beauty or pleasure has been described in the scriptures, like Srila Prabhupada gives the example, that material beauty, enjoying material beauty of this world, is like trying to enjoy sweet rice mixed with sand. Or one time Jayadvait Maharaj was giving this example, that it is like milk mixed with poison. And he further elaborated that if there is even one drop or few drops of poison in a glass of milk, what do you consider it? It's no more milk. It's just poison. So therefore you can call it killer milk. Like over here, Purvachiti's eyebrows are compared to killer eyebrows. So they are no more eyebrows. They have taken the form of killing someone, killers. So similarly, Jayadvait Maharaj was explaining that that milk no more remains milk. Anyone who drinks that milk which has been poisoned even by few drops, that milk becomes poison. You can very well call it poison. Or sweet rice mixed with sand. What is the pleasure of eating that sweet rice which is mixed with sand? So similarly, material beauty is always a mixture of nectar and poison. As Krishna explains in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that pleasure in the mode of passion, what is it? Vishaya indriya samyoga yattad agre mritopamam pariname vishamiva. In the beginning it is nectar, but towards the end it is poison. So now, when Krishna is speaking about this materialistic pleasure, which is nothing but a mixture of nectar and poison, and that nectar is just a perception, it's actually poison. Just like when somebody drinks that poisonous milk, he may think that he is drinking milk. And he may call it milk, he may see it as milk. But what is the effect of drinking that poisonous milk? He will die. So similarly in the scriptures, time and again, whenever the contact of senses with the sense objects is being described, it is always described as hazardous, having a hazardous effect, having a dangerous effect, or a killer effect, as herein it is mentioned. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Again Krishna says, whenever the senses come in contact with the sense objects, that is the origin of all miseries. And also, we see that our acharyas, they have further elaborated, like in that verse from Mukundamala Stotra, Maharaj Kulashekhar, he says, Ashcharyam etad hi manushya loke sudham parityajya visham pibanti. He is expressing a surprise when he sees at the human society. And what kind of surprise he is seeing? That the human beings who are entrapped in this material illusory energy, they are giving up sudha, they are giving up nectar of the chanting of the holy names, and instead of that, what they are accepting? Visham pibanti, as Krishna explains, that that is poison in the hand. So they are accepting willingly or drinking willingly janiya shunya vishakhaino. Also Narottam Das Thakur says that willingly I am trying to drink poison of the sense gratification of this world. In the first stand of the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is mentioned that how when somebody goes to enjoy the contact of the senses with the sense objects, how his chitta, as herein, Maharaj Agnidra loses his intelligence. Similarly, a sense enjoyer, he becomes very much filled with cares and anxieties. Etad hi atura chittanam matra sparshe chaya moho. That matra, the sense objects, and vishaya or sparsha,
these senses, when they come in contact, and they come in contact because there is the desire, there is the ichha. So what is the outcome of that? What is the outcome of these senses when they come in contact with the sense objects? Atura chittanam. The chitta becomes atur, full of cares and anxieties. It doesn't satisfy the chitta. It becomes very much filled with bewilderment, confusion and agitation. So therefore we see that conditioned living entity who is trying to just squeeze out some kind of pleasure, because this is the nature of every living entity, to seek for pleasure, to seek for ananda, ananda mayo bhyasa. It is said that every living entity, he lives for two purposes. One is something to do and someone to love. These are the two purposes for which every living entity is living or just pursuing any kind of activity. Something to do and someone to love. Something to do for someone. And that someone might be one's own self or might be one's extended self. So therefore, we can categorize materialistic lifestyle of a conditioned living entity in three characteristics: material relationship, material beauty, and material pleasure. So people who are entrapped by this illusory energy, they get into material relationship because they are attracted by the material beauty of someone, and the outcome of that and the culmination, what they want is material pleasure. And the scriptures, and not just scriptures, but all around us in this age of Kali Yuga, we can see that there are umpteen examples of people who got into material relationship, attracted by material beauty, for material pleasure, and how their attempts were futile, they were baffled in their attempts to enjoy all of that. So as far as material relationships are concerned, in the Srimad Bhagavatam we have the example of Maharaj Chitraketu. Maharaj Chitraketu, who was such a king, he had such opulence, such grandeur. He was practically ruling the entire planet Earth and had how many wives? Practically the whole Mumbai city would not be sufficient in its population. Those many wives Maharaj Chitraketu had, 10 million. But with all of that enjoyment, he was miserable. Sand and sweet rice, a mixture of sand and sweet rice again, milk and poison. In fact, the son which he got later on by the blessings of Angira Rishi, the name itself signifies sand and sweet rice, Harsha Shoka, nectar and poison. Harsha in the beginning and Shoka in the end. As herein we see, Purva Chiti, her eyebrows are glorified by Maharaj Agnidra, but Maharaj Agnidra is becoming fearful. Are these eyebrows, who are compared to bows, you are using to kill someone? So in Maharaj Chitraketu's case, we see that his very son, Angira Rishi, he named him and warned Maharaj Chitraketu that this will be the cause for your jubilation and lamentation. Harsha and Shok, sand and sweet rice, milk and poison both mixed together. So we see in material relationship how initially those relationships might appear as nectarine, but ultimately it turns into and takes a poisonous effect. I was listening to one lecture of Devamrit Swami, and he was explaining in that lecture that his brother, who was a graduate from Harvard University and got married to another graduate from that university, kind of love marriage or whatever marriage. So he had now very high and rosy expectations of his future married life ever after, as they say. So As soon as he got married, the wife, who was also a graduate from that Harvard University, she made some rules of living in that house. And because she was also a graduate, she wanted to pursue her career further, even though she was married. So she said that the first rule is, I'm not going to cook in the house, because I'm going to work also. So anyone who comes early to the house, that is the person who is supposed to cook for the dinner. Of course, the breakfast and lunch would be outside. So this husband, he had some nice expectations that when I come home from my job, I'll be having my favorite palatable dishes, which will be served out in a loving way. Then maybe I'll have some physical intimacy and then go to sleep and then again pursue my career. But over here, the first rule that I'm not going to cook, because I too have a job. And then she said, no more babies. Of course, they didn't have any, so no babies, but no more babies, no babies at all. Because I can't sacrifice my career just taking care of some silly kids. So I don't want any babies. So now, this poor husband, he would make sure that he would come a little late so that at least, you know, he would not have to come home and cook for someone or do that extra thing also, extra labor also. So each of them would make sure that they would come as late as possible, and then they would land up in some restaurant to eat. So then, when Devamrita Swami met him after some years, and Devamrita Swami started preaching to him about this Krishna conscious philosophy, and the basic philosophy how we start, that this human form of life is not meant just for eating, sleeping, mating and defending. And he said, I don't even get that to do. You are speaking of eating, sleeping, mating and defending. I don't even get to eat properly. I don't even get to sleep properly. I don't even get to mate properly. And all of these things you are talking, that these things are meant for the animals, not for the human beings. Well then, you know, at least the animals are better off than me. I consider myself a graduate from Harvard, but I don't even get to do these basic things. So we see that when relationships are based on material platform, this is what is the outcome. Sand mixed with sweet rice, milk mixed with poison. And material beauty. Material relationships are based on material beauty or material assets. And again we see scriptures explain so graphically about the material beauty or futility of this physical form. Though over here the physical form is being glorified and appreciated so much, but we see in the same pages of Srimad Bhagavatam how this physical beauty is being graphically explained, the futility of this physical form. And that famous verse of Shankaracharya which says, Angam galitam palitam munnam, dashana vihinam jatam tundam, vriddho yati grihitva dandam, tadapi namunchati asha pindam. What happens to this material body? When it grows old, it becomes decrepit, the senses become defunct. No hair left on the head, no teeth within the mouth. Everything starts melting away. But the desire to enjoy, that still goes on. Just last week ago, I was going to one program, I read one billboard. An old couple, and practically, you know, their face is full of wrinkles. And some kind of insurance policy they are advertising for. And there was a caption which said, whatever your age may be, your dreams should be wrinkle-free. So, don't mind what your age is. Even if you are lying on your deathbed, your body is full of wrinkles and crinkles. But your desires, your asha, your dreams, that should be wrinkle-free. All your dreams should be youthful.
So we see that material beauty, again, which has been spoken so heavily also, and it's not something which we have to hear about. This is something which we can see in our own lives and which we can see in everywhere all around us. That this material beauty is so futile. Again, one time His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was explaining that this physical beauty initially, which appears to be very beautiful like a fresh grape, later on it turns into a dried raisin. So that is what this material body, it turns into. Kshana Bhangur, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, this material body has been addressed as Kshana Bhangur. Dehi Naam Kshana Bhangura. What is the meaning of Kshana Bhangur? That at any moment this body can be finished. And our acharyas explain that another meaning of Kshana Bhangur is that at every moment this body is dying. One is that at any moment this can die, and the other meaning is that at every moment, moment by moment, this body is melting away, it's drying. This is material beauty. And this is something very ironical about death. That death is the most surest of all things. As we say, there is nothing more sure than death. But there is something which is very much uncertain about death. And what is that? When will it come? So one thing about death, that it is the most surest of all things. But something about death which is most unsure, which puts every living entity in such a fearful situation, is the time of death. When will it come? Recently I was talking to one medical representative, one of our devotees, and he was explaining to me about different diseases of the body, like hepatitis, rabies and like that. So he was explaining that certain diseases, they attack only certain part of the body. Like hepatitis, it attacks only the liver. Rabies, so I was asking him about rabies, this disease. He said rabies, it attacks only the brain. So when a dog bites someone, and generally dogs, they bite lower part of the body, you know, on the legs. So the virus has, you know, some time to reach the brain. So the doctors, they can stop the passage of the virus to reach the brain before it attacks the brain. And he said that a dog who is a rabid dog lives only for 7 days. A dog who has got rabies, he only lives for 7 days. And within those 7 days, if that dog bites someone, then that human being also dies. It's a fatal disease. So he was saying that a month ago, here in Dadar, a big corporator, very well-to-do, good family, just one son, loving son within the family, and they had a pet dog. So what happened, one day, the son was playing with a pet dog, not knowing that that pet dog had rabies within him. The dog was carrying that virus of rabies and was just supposed to live for those 7 days. So within those 7 days, one of the days, the son was playing with the dog. And as the nature of the dogs are, they start licking the body of the master. So the dog was licking, and the dog started licking this son's cheek. And he had some kind of boil, some kind of acne or pimple. And because of the licking of the dog, it got burst. And immediately, the virus of that rabies entered into the bloodstream. And how much time it required to reach the brain from here? Within moments, that son, he was dead on the ground. Within moments. So that dog, which was kept in the house for the security of the family members, that dog turned out to be the cause of the death of one of their most loving family members. So this is material life. So material beauty is something which is so much evident. I had one friend of mine. We were brought up in a colony kind of setup.
And this particular person, he was a kind of scholar, good looking, from a good Brahmin family. So because in a colony you know everyone, everyone knows you. So there was a very beautiful looking girl in that colony whom he had a crush on, as they say. So, you know, everyone was practically after her, trying to win over her. And this particular person, finally, he succeeded. And he won the trophy. And then he was just, you know, roaming around, showing that trophy to everyone that finally I have won over her. And then again, he had all those rosy expectations of future married life. And he got married also. And after a few years of his marriage, he was talking to me and he was in a miserable situation. Miserable situation. So I asked, well, whatever you wanted, whatever everyone else wanted, you got that. You know, that girl was also from a Brahmin family, very scholarly, good looking and all that. You know what was the reason? The reason was that this particular person, this girl, had an obnoxious bad breath. And his life was miserable just because of that. He couldn't stand her just few feet. He took her to one dentist and, you know, gave her some, you know, what do you call, mouth fresheners or whatever. Tried to take all measures to just, you know, mask or cover up that bad breath. And he was saying that, you know, that bad breath just, you know, fills my head whenever I am in close contact with her. And, you know, it just, my life is miserable because of that. So whatever he was saying his expectations were, they were all baffled. He didn't realize that this could be something which is part of this material beauty, so-called material beauty. So we see that this material body, which might appear for someone to be so beautiful, for some silly reason like this, might become like sand mixed with sweet rice or milk mixed with poison. And then material pleasure. So material relationships are based on material beauty, and material beauty people want to enjoy so that they can get that pleasure out of that. And we have the graphic example of Saubari Muni. What kind of material pleasure he enjoyed? He was enjoying with those 50 daughters of King Mandhata, and he was not enjoying in a very miserly way. It is explained that the kind of opulence Saubari Muni had expanded into, when King Mandhata saw Saubari Muni with a big palace and a kind of kingdom, King Mandhata was at that time the ruler of the seven islands and practically the entire earth planet. He gave up his kingdom because he felt ashamed in front of Saubari Muni's opulence, the way Saubari Muni was enjoying his daughters, the 50 daughters. And the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that after enjoying for so many years all that sense pleasures, Saubari Muni one time was sitting alone and he was thinking and reflecting back what he was doing when he was under Jamuna doing all those spiritual practices and what has become of him now. So in one verse, Saubari Muni is speaking to himself. Aho imam pashyata me vinasham tapasvino sacharita vritasya antarjale vari chara prasanga prachavitam brahm chiram dhritam yat. He is saying that I was doing this tapasya, sacharita vritasya, what kind of charitra I had, what kind of vrata I had taken. Antarjale, within the waters of Jamuna I was performing these austerities. Chari vara prasangat, but I saw two fishes coming and enjoying that pleasure. And I was completely bewildered and I fell from that position. And then, this is something very significant, which he is saying, and it has come in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam for all time, for everyone to read. He says that everyone now should observe my fall down and should learn from it. He is saying that openly. that this is the culmination of all that material pleasure which I was engaged in, that from now on, whoever reads about my example, they should learn from it and they should not commit that same mistake. So he's openly saying what is the futility of this material pleasure. So therefore, we also have sections in the Srimad Bhagavatam which explains about the beautiful form of the Supreme Lord, which is so pacifying and purifying to the heart. And therefore, we sing the glories of the Supreme Lord every day, Govindam Adi Purusham, and also the different limbs of the form, or limbs of the body of the Lord, who are so beautiful, and meditating on them. And of course, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is nothing but the beautiful personality of Godhead. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and one girl, she just got up and she started shouting at the top of her voice, and she said screamingly that what is wrong with illicit sex? And she was screaming at the top of her voice, it is such a good feeling and going on glorifying illicit sex. And all the devotees, they were so disturbed that what is she speaking? She's a woman, she's a girl, and this is what she's speaking to a saintly person like Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, he just closed his eyes as she was going on with glorifying that activity. And when she finished, Srila Prabhupada just opened his eyes and said, if I give you something, will you accept that? And she said, well, then chant Hare Krishna. Which means that there is nothing except the chanting of Hare Krishna which can do to a person like that, or to a person, anyone in that consciousness. So we see that as far as all these different temptations and agitations are concerned, in this age of Kali Yuga, the chanting of Hare Krishna is the only thing which is like the panacea for all diseases. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here since it's a little late. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.